Husker Doc Talk Podcast, 2016, Episode 15. Greetings and welcome to another edition of the Husker Doc Talk Podcast, presented by the Remington Trophy. I'm Travis Justice, joined by former Husker All-American Dr. Rob Zadiska. Tonight we're talking football, we're talking Huskers, and we're drinking beer. And tonight's beer selection comes from Raytown Brewery out of Raytown, Missouri. And I thought I would go a little off the wall tonight, Rob. And you've been having the beer selections the last couple of weeks. So I went shopping to Beertopia on Farnham Street in Omaha. And I found this Beetweiss. It is a... Berliner style Weiss ale brewed with beets. Yes, beets. And this is a big red beer. This is as red as it gets, isn't it?
It honestly, we look like we're drinking like
blood.
Like cranberry Manhattan.
Yes.
Or something.
I never thought I would say that I like wheat or a beet beer. But as you first bring it to your nose, it's that earthy smell.
Yeah, the beets are definitely there. Although you said it's not overwhelming, which it's not, but it's definitely earthy. It is a tart sour, which I freaking love those.
You know, I didn't know how you would react with the beets, but I feel like I accomplished something tonight. You and I bonded over the beets.
We did, and we bonded hard, dude.
Man, and it's got a cool bottle. It's got like this rooster on the front. It's made in Raytown, Missouri. It's just outside of Kansas City.
Which I don't know if I've had a bunch of their stuff. I really don't think I have.
I haven't either. And I was looking for something different tonight, looking for something unique, and I think I scored some points with you.
You nailed it.
I tried. And really, this would be good at a Husker tailgate.
You had one job,
and I nailed it. This would actually be good at a Husker tailgate because it really is a red. This now, when you think red beer, you're thinking tomato juice and Bud Light. That's not the case.
Which I like.
Yes,
love a good red beer.
But if you poured this into a glass at a tailgate, people would go, "That's a really cool looking beer." They think you're drinking,
juice.
Yeah, juice. But no, it's
which this is good. Which we talked about the sours before.
Yes, we've been
sours are excellent tailgate food because they pair really well. I hate saying this with heavy meats.
Yeah,
bratwursts, ribs, grilled or fried chicken, any kind of barbecue. Sours are really, really good with heavy meats. A lighter meat, something like seafood, lighter chicken dishes, they kind of overwhelm them. Big, heavy meats, these things work well. These things just are awesome.
So Crane Brewing out of Raytown, Missouri. Again, Crane Brewing out of Raytown, Missouri. This is the Beetweiss. It comes in a 750 milliliter bottle. That's the same bottle, same size.
As all beers should.
Yeah, as a bottle of wine. The only bad part about it is 4.5% alcohol. So not loaded with alcohol by any means.
It's definitely not. But it's I like it. It's really tasty, which a lot of the classic sours tend not to be really high alcohol content beers.
So there you go. The Beetweiss from Crane Brewing out of Raytown, Missouri. You can pick it up at Beertopia in Omaha or ask one of your favorite local venues that sells craft beer because we love craft beer and we like bringing you something new each and every week. Hey, the Husker Doc Talk podcast is presented by the Remington Trophy. The Remington Trophy is presented annually to the nation's top center. Named after former Husker great Dave Remington, the Remington Trophy Banquet will take place January 14th, 2017 at the Rococo Theater in Lincoln. Big announcement. Here it is. Drum roll, please. This year, that was a bad drum roll.
Travis, that was a really
that bad was really drum. Bad. But I don't have any drums. This year's featured speaker is Tony Richardson.
Which, if you're a Chiefs fan, that's pretty cool.
That's cool. That's really cool.
Which the guy is. The guy was arguably one of the better fullbacks of the last 30 years.
He was on the All-Decade team from 2000 to 2010.
He was.
He was a three-time Pro Bowler. He had a 16-year NFL career, retired after the 2010 season. Not bad for a guy who was not even drafted coming out of Auburn.
Here's the thing. This guy, his rookie year was the year before I hit the door in the NFL.
Yeah.
And he played for 11 seasons after I was done.
And 10 of those seasons, 10 of his 16 NFL seasons with the Kansas City Chiefs.
Yeah, I mean, talk about a guy who's just an absolute fixture with that program.
I think he's going to be a great featured speaker. Good job, Dave. Way to pick up Tony Richardson. That's awesome. So you're going to see Tony Richardson, and this year's Ford Legends Award winner is Carl Mock. He played in the NFL for 13 years, longtime assistant coach, and retired now, living in Lincoln. His daughter, who was a former Husker swimmer, also lives in Lincoln with her kids and her husband. The Remington Trophy presentation benefits the Boomer Esiason Foundation, where Dave is the president. Cystic fibrosis is a chronic disease that affects the lungs and digestive system of about 30,000 children and adults in the United States, 70,000 worldwide. This year's CF speaker is going to be at the Remington Trophy presentation will be Nicholas Bell. The Nebraskan has an inspirational story to tell. He's a great speaker, and you're going to look forward to seeing him at the Remington Trophy presentation. Coming up a little bit later on, the Remington Trophy watch list spotlight. We also want to welcome Husker Hounds to the Doc Talk podcast this season. Now three stores in Omaha. Husker Hounds is the best place to buy Husker gifts and officially licensed apparel. We've moved from Halloween season to Christmas season, yes, Christmas season. Husker, great Husker gifts and more for the holidays. Get to one of the three Omaha area locations to load up, including the new Husker Hounds store at 149th and Maple, which is now open. For online orders, go to huskerhounds.com. We also want to welcome Husker Max. They do a great job each and every week distributing the Husker Doc Talk podcast. And, of course, when you need up-to-date Husker news, go to huskermax.com. Rob, as we record this podcast, the college football playoff poll was just released. Nebraska starts
number 10.
I think, you know what, that's within striking distance. That it keeps you in the mix.
It keeps you in the conversation.
Yes.
Do they have, in my mind, a truly legitimate chance of cracking the top four?
They would have to, well, A, beat Ohio State.
They'd have to beat Ohio State, which would essentially lock up the Big Ten West.
Yes,
I think.
And then they would have to beat Michigan.
And then they'd have, yeah, assuming Michigan wins the East, which...
Who's going to beat them? Because if Ohio...
Well, keep in mind, I mean, a few weeks ago, we thought Ohio State was
true.
Damn near untouchable.
But what I mean by that is, with Michigan has Iowa left, I forget who else they have left, but if Ohio State were to lose, that'd be two losses already. So Michigan would have to lose to Ohio State in one more, and I'm like, who's going to beat Michigan? Where are they going to lose two? That's my thinking
right there. No, that's a good point. So it's probably Michigan. I think doesn't Penn State actually have this weird outside chance at it?
Has a weird outside chance at the West.
If Nebraska knocks off Ohio State, Ohio State beats Michigan, and Penn State runs the table the rest of the way, I think Penn State actually has a shot. I'd have to look at some tiebreakers because I think Penn State and Michigan would each have one loss.
No.
But there's a handful of tiebreakers there that you'd have to go down to figure that one out. But anyway, I think if Nebraska beats Ohio State, wins out,
they would be in the Big Ten West.
Wins the Big Ten West, yes. And then beats whoever wins the East.
But I think that could get you.
That would probably get you to fourth. I don't know if I'd want to be in that position. But, well, you know what? Honestly,
sure you would.
If Nebraska won the Big Ten, I'd be like, hell yeah, let's go to the playoffs.
Yes. Because I think we learned a couple things. Okay, so Texas A&M surprised me, but I do like the rationale. And I was talking to Scott Spritzer, a friend of mine,
that their loss is to Alabama, and everybody loses to Alabama, so that makes it okay.
Well, that and
I say that not tongue in cheek.
And their schedule is tougher than Washington's. Washington hasn't played anybody until they beat Utah last week, and Utah I wouldn't say is a barn burner. I mean, Washington for some reason hasn't taken a beating schedule wise like Nebraska has, and I can't figure that one out. Is it because Chris Peterson won at Boise, and so he had this automatic respect? Because
I think that's part of it.
Yeah, it's the only thing I can understand.
Well, the other thing is, too, I think from a media coverage standpoint, people watch and have known who Nebraska's played. Their one, quote-unquote, marquee team that they played up until this past weekend was Oregon, who's had a pretty subpar season. Nobody knows and nobody really cares who Washington's played. All they know is that they've won. That's it. So they look at the schedule and go, okay, Washington's won, but nobody's really taken a close look at that schedule because it's a Pac-10 team and they play all of their games at 10:45 Central
time. That's true.
And that 10:45 p.m. Yeah, Central it's time.
P.m.
So there's a lot of truth to that. So I don't think anybody's just really paid attention to who they've played. People have paid attention to who Nebraska has played, and it's obvious that when you're in the Big Ten, until you hit opponents like Wisconsin, Penn State, Ohio State, Michigan, nobody else really counts.
But do you think, and I mean this in the nicest way possible, Husker fans are pretty vocal. Husker fans will tell you, they reach out to Kirk Herbstreit and other people on a vocal basis saying, hey, we're back. Do you think that brings the – you don't hear that from a Washington Husky fan, or at least I don't think you do. Do you think that brings more scrutiny to like, okay, we're listening to you, but who have you played?
That brings more scrutiny. I mean, God, do you remember the game day when they were talking about Nebraska when they – I think it was for the Indiana game?
Yeah. And when Herbstreit said, who have you played?
Yeah, everybody starts laughing.
Yes.
Like, do these guys deserve to be in the top 10? And everybody started laughing.
Yeah.
What I find interesting about it is that Nebraska loses, and the loss plummets them to, what, ninth in the AP poll?
Yeah.
When you lose and you drop to ninth.
From sixth.
All of a sudden, you've gotten a few people's attention.
Yes. I totally agree with you.
And so I think it's one of those things where if Nebraska loses, let's say Nebraska loses to Ohio State, and it is a close game. Nebraska does to Ohio State what we did to Wisconsin. We still lose in a nail biter. Nebraska is going to drop, but again, we're only going to drop to like 13th.
Yeah, you're probably out of the West, and for sure you're out of the college football playoff.
You are, but think about it. Say if this was under Pelini, you lost, you drop a few spots, you lose a second time. All of a sudden, you're going to find yourself like 21st.
You know, we haven't talked much about the loss to Wisconsin last week, and I want to bring this up to you. Not, and this is a generality question to begin with. What's going to bring us back to the officiating? But you had Bobby Petrino at halftime of the Louisville game last week go off on the officials, and then go off on them in a halftime interview. Jimbo Fisher went off on the officials and personally critiqued them in his post game interview. I believe it was Josh Norman from the Washington Redskins went off on an NFL official, said, who's number 88? He flat out sucked. So we're getting more and more criticism of the officials. I want to ask you, because you did, how a pass interference was not called late in the game against Wisconsin.
It was a bad no call.
Is officiating today worse than it was, or is it because we have all these camera angles, we have super slow motion, we have Twitter, we have social media?
It's a combination of it. Okay. I think there is a little bit of a reliance upon the instant replay, and I think I have heard officials voice that, and I remember when official replay first came into being, I remember seeing interviews with guys, it might have been Cleet Blakeman even, where they talked about how, yeah, this is going to kind of erode skills a little bit, because instead of guys really, really being honed in on what they got to be honing in on, and there's kind of an art and science to hear, where do my eyes need to be? What do I need to be watching on a given play? How should I be scanning the field or scanning my portion of the field? And I think there was an art to it, and there was an incredible skill set to it on the officials' part, and I think they're very good at that. And I think as official replay has kind of more and more played a role in these situations, the argument's gone both ways, but I think it's eroded the skills a little bit. I think there's a little bit of even a subconscious notion in the back of their minds of, well, if I screw it up, I've still got instant replay.
That's not a reviewable call. A PI.
And that one's not. But that being said, I think if there's a little bit of a lack of focus in one area, I think that's going to end up translating, and it's going to spread to other areas as well, too. Now, that was one where it was a bad no call. I'm sitting here, and I'm trying to play sort of a devil's advocate in favor of the official, to sit here and go, okay, well, maybe he was kind of shielded by the two Wisconsin players, but that doesn't discount the fact that the other Wisconsin player did a WWE cross body block and just completely took out Westerkamp.
I would like to see, and they don't make these public, but you know, believe it or not, officials are graded each and every week.
Oh, they are, and it depends on who's going to go officiate bowl games, who's going to officiate playoffs, things like that.
So, Mike Riley, I'm sure, got the grade. They, coaches get what the grades are. They are given that information.
And they get to submit specific plays for review that can really hammer an official.
But sometimes you get the reply back that you didn't want to hear. Sometimes they can justify a no call. I would just like to see what the Big Ten's justification was on the no call, because Mike Riley or somebody found out what the call was. I promise you that. Somebody knows what the call was, whether they said, yes, it was a missed call, we were apologizing for that, or no, this is why the flag wasn't called, if you look closely. I'd like to know what the justification was from the Big Ten. We're not going to see it, but just know that these officials are graded.
It'd be interesting to know what the conference said about that, which, in general, it's not the strongest officiated conference, I think.
Really?
I really don't think it is. The worst out there, hands down, in my opinion, is the Big 12. I think that's the worst officiated conference out there. Kelly Saulfield, I apologize, former Husker center, who's a Big 12 official. But the year Cleet Blakeman went to the NFL, I think there was one or two other Big 12 officials that all went to the NFL in that same time period. And it went from one of the better officiated conferences out there to one of just the absolute worst. It's just a trash.
Well, you know, and Coach Osborne,
Big Ten, it's not the worst. It's not the best, though, either.
And Coach Osborne, you remember, was saying, hey, the Big 12 needs to take better steps to keep officials like Cleet in the college game. But here's the deal. When you know you're going to be a white hat in the NFL, you're taking that gig.
Oh, you're going. Which Cleet's an outstanding.
Yes, he did the Super Bowl last
year. When you work your way up, I mean,
fastest ever to a white hat.
In half a dozen years, he's gone from a Big 12 official to officiating in the Super Bowl. that's incredible.
Yeah, I mean, you're right. So, I mean, guys, most of these guys want to do the National Football League. If they think they're good enough to be in the NFL, they want to do the NFL.
Oh, yeah.
But
I'm sure the pay's better.
Well, you're a full-time employee. You get paid year-round and you get health benefits. And you have a union. So
it's not a bad gig.
It's not a bad gig.
I should become an official.
You're smart enough to become an official. I don't know if you're fast enough to become an official.
Oh, I can truck for a fat
kid. Can you?
Oh, yeah.
But you're not fat. You're ripped.
Well,
I'm fat. You're ripped.
I'm fat and fast.
No.
I can move, dude.
Hey, this week's Remington Trophy Spotlight shines on Will Noble from the University of Houston.
Will's only a sophomore.
I know, 6'4", 290 pounds. He's a 2016 Remington Trophy watchlist guy. He was a 2016 Athlon Sports preseason American Conference second team pick. He had a great freshman year. Freshman All-American by the Football Writers Association, freshman All-American by ESPN, freshman All-American by USA Today, and a freshman All-American by Scout.com. He started all eight games this season for Houston, team averaging 470 yards a game, 38 points per game. Cougars 6-2 on the season.
Another guy who never redshirted. So I'm impressed by some of these guys who don't have that year of development.
And he started, I think, like eight games last year.
He started, I thought it was eight or nine. There was like one earlier in the year. There was a couple then where he didn't, and then I thought it was like the last eight of the season he started for him. Although I say that in terms of the red shirt and the development he's from, I think it's like Leander, Texas. But he's a Texas kid, grew up there. I mean, the guy, they have spring football there, for God's sake.
Well, keep in
mind, that counts as like two redshirt years just for coming out of Texas.
Dave makes this pretty easy when he selects the Remington Trophy winner. It's a consensus of the All-American teams. And I look at a guy like Noble, and he's going to be a guy that he's not going to win it this year. But if he stays with Houston, he's the type of guy you keep on your radar for next year or his senior season.
Yeah, his junior year, this guy, I mean, we've had a couple of guys that were sort of in this situation where we're looking at it going, okay, maybe not this year, but next year this is going to be a top three, top five guy. And I think Noble's one of those top five guys next year. This year, he's, you know, how many guys are on the watch list?
Oh, God, a shitload.
It's like 30.
Yeah.
Which you got to have guys number 6 through 30.
Yeah.
He's one of those. this is a guy to keep your eye on in the future. He couldn't go to the NFL. He's only 2 years out of high school.
But yeah, he didn't redshirt.
What he's done in a short period of time, however, is pretty impressive.
All right, so Will Noble, our Remington Trophy spotlight. And don't forget, if you want to go to the Remington Trophy presentation, Rob and I talk about it. It's one of the great, great events of the year. It's January 17th, the Rococo Theater in Lincoln. January 14th, 2017 at the Rococo Theater in Lincoln. For tickets, go to RemingtonTrophy.com. Now, we're getting down to business. Nebraska at Ohio State. Two tough back-to-back
football
games.
So are we not even going to talk about Wisconsin?
Well, why don't you try to bring in Wisconsin into the Ohio State talk? And we'll start, you can do that, and we'll start almost like this, because this is my first question. Because it's not really about the game this week, but you can reflect back on the Wisconsin game. Is Tommy Armstrong getting better or worse as the season goes along?
I think he stayed the same, but I think the fact that the protection in front of him is worn thin, I think, has hurt him a lot. I think as some of these injuries have piled up, this Wisconsin game was the first game that I watched where I thought Armstrong legitimately looked jumpy. One of those where he looked jittered. I don't know if rattle's the right word, but the offense on the whole just looked out of sync. And again, they've got reason to when you look at the injuries on the offensive line, the lack of depth there, Tanner Farmer getting hurt. I think Farmer tried to come back too soon. He got blown up on a series of plays early in the game, and then the ankle. He injured it really pretty severely then later on. But I think Tommy's in a situation where I think he's kind of back in that mode of feeling like he's got to put the whole team on his shoulders and his shoulders alone. I don't think he's trusting the system, which I think if he would, and I think if he would trust what he needs to do, he would throw almost with no pass rush. I mean, there's always a pass rush, but with no imminent pass rush threat right in his face, he would still throw the ball backing up, falling backwards, not planting that foot, lofting the ball up in the air. Accuracy suffered, ball speed suffered. Then I saw other plays where you could tell he was you could literally see him thinking to myself, that was a bad throw next. I got to make sure I follow proper mechanics. Two plays later, he'd drop back again. He'd plant that back foot, lean into the throw, and just deliver an absolute strike. And as long as the mechanics were sound, man, he was nailing everything. As soon as you could tell, he started thinking, I got to make a play. I got to make a huge play. I got to carry the team. I'm not going to trust the system and the game plan. I'm going to try and make a play by myself. That's when you start seeing everything fall apart. And I felt like I saw a lot of that out of him on Saturday night.
It was interesting because I'm going to get all business geeky here. But Jim Clifton, I'm a big fan of a Gallup. And the Gallup Strengths Finder. You know, and Gallup has very good science behind their reasoning. And they're like, you know, you can improve what your weakness is like 10%. But you can improve your strengths like 80%, which means, but I kept thinking he's trying to improve his weaknesses and he's not improving. But you're right, when he does go to what he knows, the game plan, it's like it clicks.
And when he plays within that, things go very well. I just felt like he played a little bit rattled. And I think when he kind of had his shtick together, things went well. That the very last play of the game in overtime, he's kind of not necessarily falling backwards, but it wasn't a real good plant, proper mechanics, throw right on time. I mean, throw is a little lofted, it was a little soft, and it arrived just a little bit late. And I think that's one of those, if he plants it and blasts a dart right in there, I think the ball is caught, Nebraska scores a touchdown and either sends it into a second overtime or wins the game on the extra point attempt. So, I don't know. If he plays within himself and he plays within the system, I think Nebraska tends to be perfectly fine. The defense played lights out. I mean, by the time we got to halftime, the announcers were struggling to keep up with their game plan of talking about how awesome Wisconsin's defense is and how nobody can measure up to Wisconsin's defense, and Wisconsin's defense is the only defense on the planet Earth. By the time we got halfway through the third quarter and definitely into the fourth quarter, they were having to admit, crap, Nebraska's defense is playing really well. Now, Wisconsin's offense sucks ass. But Nebraska's offense is pretty hindered right now, too.
Yeah.
So it's they've got some of their own issues.
So what you're saying,
what does that mean for Ohio State?
Yeah. Well, they're talking about a possible Seathan Carter return. Westerkamp.
He was a difference maker.
Did that surprise you? Because you thought he was going to be out longer. I mean, secretly.
I thought he was going to be out longer, but I also made the point, too, that, listen, I could see there being a chance he comes back because I said the low end of the time frame that I was given was 4 weeks. That was the earliest that they thought they'd see him back. And the Wisconsin game was 4 weeks to the day that he got injured.
Okay.
So, and I talked about that. I mean, we discussed
that.
Yeah,
we did.
I said that'd probably be the earliest. So, yeah, theoretically, you could see him by Wisconsin. I almost think Armstrong, it was almost like he wasn't used to having him out there. There was a couple of plays where Westerkamp was completely wide open. The guy is a stellar route runner, and he knows how to get open. And he did against Wisconsin, and Tommy completely missed him. But I think it's because for 3 weeks, Tommy hasn't been looking for him.
Yeah, I'll give you that.
I'll be curious to see what effect having Seathan Carter can do. I'll be curious to see what having Westerkamp back now for another week of practice, some meetings, some film work, and Westerkamp telling Tommy, hey, dude, these three plays, I was wide freaking open. You got to start looking for me again. I'll be curious to see what that effect has on a game like the one that they've got coming up. I'm still massively concerned about the offensive line.
As you should be.
Yeah. Gates is still nursing injuries.
But the offense isn't going to win. The defense is going to win games for this team. Because they're going to keep them in the game.
It will, but damn it, you got to score points. I thought a lot of the fault in this game was with the offense. The Wisconsin game, I mean. I think the offense was a little jittery. I thought, like I said, it was not Tommy's best game.
No, it wasn't.
Freaking long shot. I thought from a decision-making standpoint, he just seemed, like I said, rattle's too harsh of a word. But I think it's almost like he got a little too hyped up for the game. A little too fired up. It's a crazy crowd. It's Camp Randall. The horseshoe's not much better. I don't think any place is as bad as Camp Randall.
Yeah.
But the horseshoe's not a hell of a lot better, though.
You know, it's hard to believe they haven't played Ohio State since 2012. Nebraska's 4-1, or rather 1-4 all time against Ohio State. The lone win came back in Lincoln in 2011. I remember that game vividly. It was a 37-24 game. That was when we... Braxton Miller came in and
he got hurt.
But then the next year, the last time they played, it was a 63-38 loss. Here's the way I look at it, and I've thought about this really since last Saturday. Nebraska either goes to Columbus and wins, or Nebraska gets its ass kicked. I don't think it's going to be close. I think they either win close or they get drilled.
I could see it being a close loss. Here's why. Ohio State's offense is not the offense they've had in the past. They got Elflin at center. The rest of their offensive line's a bit of a project right now. The guards are a little bit of a weakness on that offense. They don't have Ezekiel Elliott.
People forget. For Urban Meyer to start, like, they only had like two or three starters back when the season started.
Yeah, this was a bit of a rebuilding
year
for him. And you know, we constantly crack these jokes about, you know, Urban Meyer sold his soul for the devil, and nobody can reload like Ohio State can. But Yeah, you know what? This is not the Ohio State teams, and this is not the across-the-board talent.
I would agree.
That he had last year, the year before that. It's, I mean, he's still recruiting insanely well. They've got awesome players, but it's not the same level of talent. When you look at Ezekiel Elliott, the guy's leading the NFL in rushing. He's going to be a Pro Bowler this year, I'm betting. I mean, the only reason
he's going to be,
the only reason Dak Prescott, who's having the most awesome year ever for a rookie quarterback, isn't going to be Rookie of the Year is because his running back is going to be Rookie of the Year.
Either that, there are a lot of people saying Ezekiel Elliott may be the MVP of the National Football League, and then they give Dak Prescott the Rookie of the Year.
Well, there it'd be a nice way to spread the honors, but they don't have that great running back, which, you know, Banker made a great point about it. Somebody asked him in the press conference this week about Ohio State's running back, and he said, yeah, it's not Ezekiel Elliott, but he's definitely not going to be the worst running back we've seen this year. I mean, they're very good across the board, but they're not the Ohio State team in the past. But, yeah, their offensive line, it's like I said, once you get past Elflin at center, it falls off really quickly. And their offensive line, while it's not as hampered or banged up as Nebraska's, they've struggled to find consistency. Ohio State's defense, same kind of situation. They lost a ton of guys last year. A lot of people really they thought Ohio State was going to be a great team, but people doubted they were going to be as strong as they had been the previous couple of years, and a lot of that actually had more to do with the losses they had on defense. I mean, you got Apple playing cornerback for the Giants now, and they lost a couple of linebackers. They lost, I thought it was three defensive linemen off of last year's team that were starters. It's, you look at Bosa's playing in the NFL. Yeah. It's just they've lost a lot of guys. I mean, it's a different team, and I don't think it's as strong as a team. If Nebraska is able to look at that Wisconsin game and kind of have a really good heart-to-heart with themselves from a mental standpoint, say, hey, you know what? We went up to that place. Everybody thought we were going to get our asses kicked, and instead we proved we were every bit as good as they were. And I think if Nebraska can come to the understanding that that was not the best game they've played. I mean, Nebraska did not play great against Wisconsin. Offense mainly. Defense, I thought, played very
but
well.
But did Wisconsin's defense play a little bit into that? I mean, because I can look at it this way. Nebraska controlled the clock. Look at this. I mean, the two turnovers were both Tommy. Those were picks. And they were only penalized two times for 10 yards.
They did some very good things. I thought they could have done better.
And I agree with you.
And that's one of those things where, as the week's gone along, I've gotten less pissed about the officiating call. And more the thing that's kind of hanging over my mind is, God, there was this play where, God, if they had blocked it a little bit better, they could have done this. There was a couple of plays where I saw outstanding blocking. And Newby, instead of following the blocks to the outside, cut it up inside right into the arms of a linebacker. It just didn't see the hole very well. And those are some of the plays Tommy had. You mentioned the turnovers. One of them was a deflected ball or a batted ball, and can't really fault him for that as much. But he did not play his strongest game.
He's going to need a strong game against Ohio State.
Yeah, there was a number of instances watching that game where I've gone back and watched it again, and it's just the thing that kind of sits there is like, God, if Nebraska played as well as they could have, I think we beat Wisconsin hands down. They don't have those two turnovers in the first half. They beat Wisconsin. Tommy plays a little bit better. They beat Wisconsin.
So what you're saying is...
I think if Nebraska can walk away from it going, holy crap, we decidedly did not play to our potential. We did not play our best game of the year by any stretch of the imagination. And we still took a top 10 team down to the wire in overtime. Just imagine what we can do if we get our shit together. And I think if they have sort of that little mental coming to Jesus, I think they can do the same thing and go into Columbus and knock those guys off.
But you can have the coming to Jesus, but at the end of the day, if I hear you correctly, correct me if I'm wrong, but I think I'm hearing you say that it all really rides on Tommy Armstrong's shoulders. And we shouldn't be surprised by it.
I think if he plays within himself and plays within the system, trusts the coaching calls, trusts the play calling, and trusts what he's capable of doing if he doesn't try to play above and beyond his capabilities, I think Nebraska is going to do very well. Now, the offensive line needs to heal up a little bit. The offensive line needs to play very well. Wisconsin's defense, it's a bunch of studs.
Yeah.
I mean, it's God, that's a good defense. And it's
that was the backups.
Yeah, and here's the other thing. That might be one of the best coached defenses I've seen.
Wow, that's saying something.
They played so well. I mean, from a game planning standpoint, they knew exactly what Nebraska was going to do in almost every play. I mean, they were very, very well coached, and it showed. So I don't know if Luke Fickell's as good a D coordinator as what Wisconsin has.
How does he still have a job? I mean, think about it. I mean, is that like, hey, you filled
it? I don't think he's bad.
No, but, you know,
I don't think he's great.
Was that a reward where, hey, you filled in for a season when we fired Jim Tressel, we're going to guarantee that you get to keep your job under Urban Meyer?
Yeah, a little bit.
Yeah. I thought he would have moved on by now, like, hey, I'm going to go get a different job because I wasn't really part of this staff. But he did play at Ohio State.
Yeah, but that's his school.
Yeah.
What do you want to do? I mean, why would you want to leave? Why not stay there and get your 10 to 12 wins a year under Urban?
You know, I do appreciate the
history. And I guarantee he's making, like half a million?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I do appreciate the history of the game and the tradition of both teams. Of course, both these teams have had their ups. They've had their downs. Both are on an upswing again. 11 national championships between these two
Ohio
schools.
Ohio State's on an upswing?
Well, you know, you go back to...
I'd like to think they've kind of like plateaued across...
Okay, I'll give you that. 11 national championships between the two. 6 for Ohio State, 5 for Nebraska. 35 conference titles for Ohio State, 46 for Nebraska. 47 bowl appearances for Ohio State, 52 for Nebraska. 7 Heisman Trophy winners for Ohio State, 3 for Nebraska. 110 All-Americans for Nebraska, 192 for Ohio State. I mean, it's just, you have great history, great tradition, which makes this game, it's better when Nebraska is up because it makes games like this so much more enjoyable to watch.
It does, and I mean, the fact that now you've got stuff riding on this.
Yes.
You've got a legitimate chance at the West Division riding on it for Nebraska. You got a chance to stay in the East Division race for Ohio State as well as the national picture. I mean, Nebraska wins this game. Ohio State's out of the running for most everything in terms of postseason stuff.
Well, yeah, they're not going to be in the college football playoff. They're not going to be in the Big Ten title game. You're right. I mean, Ohio State, and that's what scares me about this. I mean, Ohio State knows what's riding on this. Both teams know what's riding on. It's like,
but that's the thing. There's as much for Nebraska riding
yes.
on this, because I think all of a sudden now, I think Nebraska's players are sitting there after that Wisconsin game. They better be sitting there going, "Holy crap, we can compete with anybody, and we can do it on a national basis." I mean, it's, you know, you look at the big picture. So the playoff rankings that came out. It's Alabama and everybody else. I know there's a top four. But, I mean, it's not like you look at Clemson and go, oh, my God, Clemson has just freaking owned their schedule. They've had three really close scrapes now. You look at A&M, you know, they've kind of blown out a lot of people, but they got just absolutely smoked by Alabama. You got Michigan who... you know, Michigan State pushed them.
That's a rivalry game. You got to give some props to the rivalry.
It is, and it was in East Lansing.
Yeah.
So I will give it that, but Michigan State's having a horrible year, and they pushed them.
You know who's actually playing?
Wisconsin pushed Michigan.
Yes.
I mean, it's not like Michigan It's not like they're, I mean, they're kind of like Ivan Drago. It's they've bled a little bit here and there. They're not untouchable. Somebody's going to beat Michigan. I don't know when. But
maybe Alabama.
Yeah, it might be in the national title game or the playoff game if they're in the same division. But somebody's going to knock off Michigan this year. They're not going to go undefeated.
It's going to be fun to watch because I'm just looking at the Big Ten standings right now. Of course, Nebraska leads the West at 7-1, and then 4-1 in the league. Then you've got a bunch at 3-2: Wisconsin at 3-2, Minnesota at 3-2, Iowa at 3-2, Northwestern at 3-2. But again, if Nebraska loses and gets that second loss, all Wisconsin would have to do to win out because they had beaten Nebraska, they'd beaten Nebraska or Northwestern, and they'd beaten Iowa. So that would give them, you know, the lead. So
here's a theoretical question to ponder. Let's say Nebraska loses to Ohio State.
Okay.
Probably out of the West.
Yeah.
Is that always a bad thing?
Because
now it's one of those things. You've got Maryland, Minnesota, and Iowa left to play. All should be very winnable games, in my opinion.
Should be.
Should be. I'm not saying they are, but they should be winnable games, in my opinion. Let's say Nebraska heals up a little bit, plays to their potential, wins those three games. They finish with, what would that be, a 10-2 season?
I'm already going to answer your question. Yeah. I know where you're going with it, but the answer is no. You know why? If it was Iowa, I'd say yes, because Iowa's not committed to winning championships. Nebraska's committed to winning championships.
And God, I love your answer. I like you more now than I did
that's,
before.
That's the truth.
Ask that question.
So to answer your question, no.
It is. You want to play in those
games. Yeah, you want to play. I mean, Nebraska is about playing in championship games. Always has been. That's what the fans expect. That's what the administration expects. And you know I'm an Iowa fan. I make no bones about it. But if people would listen to my radio show in Des Moines, if they'd listen to when I host the Hawkeye postgame show, I rip Iowa for exactly that lack of thinking. They never talk about championships. They always talk about, well, you know, this bowl's good enough. If you're playing in Jacksonville on January 1, that's good enough. Well, no, it's not. You know, to me, if you just won the West last year with a 12-0 regular season record, and you're not
but they
just,
didn't have a 12-0 record.
Regular season. But they ended 12-2. I know what you're saying. But at the
Iowa went 12-0 in 2015.
Okay, they went to the Big Ten undefeated. You have everybody back, and you're not pissed off where you're at right now. And they're not. Some people are. Some people aren't. Well, that's the cycle they're in. I don't understand that mentality of thinking. Nebraska always has been, for as long as I've been around the program, committed to winning championships. Did they do it every year? No. But you ask the question, is it better? No, it's not better. You want to play. You want to win the West. And even if you get your ass kicked in the championship game, you want to be playing for championships. You know, I'm not going to brag on Bo Pelini. And I know people were mad because he got blown out every time he played in the Big Ten championship. But he got there. And wouldn't you rather have played there than not get there? I would have.
Well, would you rather have played there and gotten just utterly destroyed?
Yes, I would. I would have, because at least I still had a chance to play for a championship. Don't you want the shot to play for it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
As a player, yeah. As a fan,
I get
okay,
what fans...
So part of me almost kind of wonders, okay, how about 2001?
2001, when you got beat by Miami.
Got smoked by Colorado.
Yes.
I got to be honest with you. I was actually praying to God that Colorado would get the BCS bid. Because if they did, then Nebraska would have actually slipped to the Sugar Bowl to play Big Ten champion Illinois in the Sugar Bowl.
But you know what?
And we would have destroyed them.
You got to play for a national title.
We got freaking smoked.
Go
by
back
Miami.
And look at that Miami team and see how many NFL players run that team.
I know. That's my point. I'm like, there's no way we could match.
I'm
up
actually
with
glad
those
Nebraska
guys.
Got to play for the national championship because I got to go to the Rose Bowl for the first time in my life, and it was a great trip. I remember the trip as if it was yesterday. I just started at Channel 3. Me, Greg Peterson, Deb Ward, like four other photographers went out. We were out there for like 8 days. It was awesome. It was awesome. I remember that. I think I had my first Appletini out there. I know it's not a real manly drink, But I got so drunk off Appletini's. I saw John Lovitz in a restaurant.
Travis.
Yes.
Forget John Lovitz.
We're drinking beet beer, so be careful what you're saying.
It's still a freaking beer. And actually, I'm going to be honest with you.
Yes.
I know it's beet beer. This thing would kick the crap out of most people trying to drink it. Did you actually say Appletini?
I did. I have a vagina. You're right. Stop it. Don't look at me like that.
I'm so sad right now.
Don't look at me like that.
I'm so sad. I'm going to call your wife down here and see if she can't bring you a wine spritzer.
Tim Beck against Nebraska. What do you think about this?
Thank God the guy's horrible. Worst play calling O coordinator out there.
Do you believe that?
I think he's horrible. Ezekiel Elliott as a player called him out.
Good point.
And I guarantee you, he wasn't the only Ohio State player sitting there thinking that. They all were. I watched Ohio State last year, and all I could think was, oh, my God, it looks like Tim Beck's calling play. Well, oh, wait, he is.
And that's what you get.
I do. I do not think he's a good play caller. And I think he's been, I don't know.
He's still like co-offensive coordinator, but I don't think he has the play calling duties.
I would love it if he called plays.
What does that mean when you're a co-offensive coordinator? Somebody's got to call the play. Is that just like, oh, you were brought in to do this, but you can't do your job, but I can't really demote you?
I think it's a case where you had a guy who got brought in to do that, did a subpar job of it, and he got demoted. And I think the other offensive coordinator is now calling the plays.
I think it's one of the better storylines of this game. You have Tim Beck going against his old team, of course, Nebraska. Of course, you've got Ohio State, Nebraska. It's one of those classic showdowns. Now, Rob, I want your honest answer. You don't have to give the big red answer. What happens in this game?
I think Nebraska beats them.
Do you really?
I do, because I think Ohio State's a little bit smoke and mirrors right now.
Okay.
And I'd be the first to admit, I mean, Indiana pushed him to the brink. Ohio
yes.
State got lucky for that game to finish the way it did, because it finished with it looking like Ohio State blew Indiana out, and they didn't. They lost to Penn State. Now, and I'll admit, it was their whiteout day. It was at Penn State. Again, not the easiest place to play. I don't think Bo Pelini ever lost at Penn State. It's not an easy place to go into and play, and Bo never lost to him there. And I think those were better coached Bill O'Brien Penn State teams than exist now. The Northwestern pushed him to the brink. And again, that was at Ohio State. That was a close game.
You know,
and I know everybody talks about, well, you know, at North, Pat Fitzgerald, he made some changes the way they do things. They're hitting in practice now. They kind of came together as a team. Okay, you know what? Nebraska still beat Northwestern solidly at Northwestern. Northwestern was within, again, a couple of fourth down conversions of tying up or knocking off Ohio State. That game was not in the bag for Ohio State until the very end. So I'm not believing that they're this absolutely untouchable team. I think they're capable of being beat, and they've got some decided weak areas on their team this year.
You know, and people are going to be shocked by this. And I said either Nebraska wins or they get blown out. I think they win. I'm right there with you. And the only reason I say if they get blown out is because turnovers will haunt them. If they lose, turnovers will haunt them.
Yeah, if they have classic Nebraska Pelini-esque mistakes, which also haunted them all of last year under Riley too, but turnovers and penalties, they're going to get their ass kicked.
And that's why. But I think it's a closer game. I think it's not as high scoring. I think I'm looking at about a 24-17, 24-21 Nebraska win.
I would absolutely love it.
You'd go with that?
I would love it.
I tell you what, I want you guys to follow Dr. Rob on Twitter. He was really active last Saturday.
God,
I mean,
was pissed after that.
Yes,
game.
He was. He was very, very upset. At Doc Talk Sports. At Doc Talk Sports is where you can follow Dr. Rob. Hey, if you're listening here on Podbean, go to the bottom of the page. You'll see a little comment section. You can put your comments on there, good, bad, and different. It doesn't really matter. But we'd like to hear from you. And I'm usually pretty active in writing back and giving you comments. If you're on iTunes, give us a rating. Give us a thumbs up, thumbs down. Again, the more people that talk about us, the more people that this gets distributed to. I want to thank the Remington Trophy for presenting this podcast. January 14th, 2017, Rococo Theater in Lincoln is the Remington Trophy presentation. Go to RemingtonTrophy.com. For Dr. Rob Zadiska, I'm Travis Justice. We'll talk to you next week on the Husker Doc Talk podcast presented by the Remington Trophy.